WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. Here on a Sunday morning, I'm your host, Wes Moss. Here every Sunday morning from 9, every Sunday morning from 9 to 11. Today, 9 to 10, we're followed by Bulldog Brunch. It's football season, in case you've been living under a rock. But we've got an hour to talk about what's happening in the economy and the stock market and answer your calls and questions. If you missed last week, we had a fascinating interview with the president of Atlanta's Federal Reserve Bank, Rafael Bostic, who really, we talked about the inverted yield curve that happened earlier this year. We talked about affordable housing. We talked about the strength of the economy. So if you missed that interview, you can find it on iTunes at Wes Moss Money Matters. You can find it iTunes or Spotify. And what a little bit of what about what I want to talk about today goes back to the interview with President Bostic. And here we are with another solid week for stocks. But on the other side of the equation, we've been seeing interest rates going up, particularly this past week. So stocks are going up, but interest rates are going up as well. Turns out that Fed President Rafael Bostic was right on the money last week. He talked about inflation, and there's this big worry that inflation is not high enough. It's not meeting the Fed's 2% mandate. That's where they want inflation to be, at around 2% and be stable there. That's part of their dual mandate, price stability and getting inflation right around 2%. Here we are a week later, and core inflation numbers just came out at 2.4%. So he was really kind of right on the money, saying that he thought inflation was actually in a pretty good place. But now let's look at the relationship. We were talking about bonds, inflation, and the stock market. Let's look at the relationship between these areas and what investors have to choose from. If you look at a 10-year treasury bond right now, and let's look at this relative to inflation, 10-year treasury bond today is around 1.7, 1.8% interest rate or yield to the investor. Well, now inflation is over 2%. So investors ask themselves, they ask this question, what's a better deal for me right now? To invest in stocks that are near all-time highs, or do I buy bonds that are yielding under 2%. First of all, that's always a tough call. There's obviously very different properties between stocks and bonds. One's highly stable and one can be highly volatile. So it's always a tough call. But if you take a look at the S&P 500 today, just as an index, as a group of companies, it itself is paying income or dividends of almost 2%. So stocks in general are yielding more and pay more than the 10-year treasury bonds do. As of this past week, 53% of companies in the S&P 500 had a higher dividend yield than the current 10-year treasury. So you put it all together, you put all this together, and I think what we're seeing is that equity investors or stock investors are choosing stocks that also generate income over fixed income, at least right now. And of course, stocks have the potential for income and growth as well. Has there been a material shift in sentiment because of trade negotiations? And is that why stocks are up? Not really. Yes, we had a little bit of goodwill this week. We delayed tariffs by a couple of weeks on a portion of what we had talked about raising tariffs on Chinese goods. But again, not a material shift. It's not like we got we've seen a big trade deal. No, we're not there at all yet. But yes, we see some goodwill. I think what we're really seeing is investors making a decision to own stocks relative to bonds, at least right now, and that's been pushing markets up. But today, I want to go to the phones and answer your questions. If you don't get through today here on the show, then we will. You can certainly email us. So today, give us a call here in the studio, 404-872-0750. If you don't get through today, just email us your questions. Go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Contact button upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. We're in Atlanta. Happy to talk to you, particularly as your situation gets more and more complicated. You want to talk to a real live human? We're happy to do that as well. So let's go to the phones. Yes, I gotcha. We're going to start with Rob in Flowery Branch. Rob, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. What's going on? How can I help, man?
Hey, good morning, Wes. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Great. Okay. So the question is about the new tax rules and the changes to mortgage interest deduction.
Yes. Okay.
So the short version of mine is owned a second home. It was cash. Recently sold it. So I got a little bit of cash, still carrying a mortgage on my primary home. And I'm trying to make the decision between, you know, investing the cash from the sale of the second home or going ahead and paying off primary home mortgage.
Yeah.
And to me, it kind of comes down to the deductibility of mortgage interest, which I think has changed on the new tax rules.
Well, it's changed, right? There's a lower cap now, so you can deduct a less sizable mortgage. How much is left on the mortgage?
About $140,000.
Is still that $140,000 mortgage? That's still deductible. But I think the bigger question, Rob, and this is the question that we all think about when we're about ready to pay off debt or not, is that what else could I do with the money?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what you're faced with here. You're saying, should I invest this $140,000 or should I take $140,000 and pay off the mortgage? Well, first of all, how old are you? How many years until retirement?
Well, I'm already, I guess, semi-retired. I'm 57, and I've already retired. I do work part-time, but that's it.
And one of the first tests that I try to do on paying off the mortgage. So first of all, here's the deal. Here are the statistics on mortgages. And this will just give you a little insight into how it will feel if you don't have one. Retirees that are within 5 years of paying off the mortgage, right? So or it's paid off, right? That group, four times more likely to be in the happy retiree group, which advocates to paying off a mortgage has psychological benefits beyond just the financials, right? So there is a definitive sense of relief when you don't have a mortgage, and you can really focus on your discretionary spending and not this primary bill that you have to pay. So first of all, what is the percentage rate and the structure of the current mortgage?
I want to say it was, it's a 15 and it's like a 4.25.
15 year and 4.25. And how many years left on the 15?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd have to do a little homework to figure that out.
But you feel like you're about halfway through it, or did you just refinance it?
Oh, no, more than halfway through it.
All right, so let's call it, you have 5 years left. And the money that comes out of the real estate sale, let's assume, because really to me, from what you're telling me, this, I think the one-third rule applies. So if you can take a third or less of your after-tax money and pay off the mortgage, I would tell you that, particularly with, Rob, and think about it in the context of where else you're going to put it. Interest rates are low, so you're only going to get 2 or 3% a year from bonds or safe money, and the stock market is at an all-time high, or just it's near an all-time high. So there's less likely, doesn't mean this won't happen, and I still think the economy is strong for this year and probably next year, and the markets could be pretty good. But we are also near all-time highs. So you can guarantee yourself 4.25% paying off the mortgage. You can't guarantee yourself 4% in bonds or 4% in the stock market. So what I would tell you is if that 140, Rob, is a third or less of your after-tax money, because you can't count retirement money here. You can't count 401k, IRA. That doesn't count. If $140,000 is a third or less of your after-tax money, then I'd say pay it off. That's where I'm headed with the totality of the data you've given me. But is the 140 a third or less?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So for instance, if you have $500,000 in after-tax money, 140 divided by 500 is 28%. I'd say, yes, do it. If you have if you have 200 grand in after-tax money and 140 of it is well over half, then I say, don't do it, because you need that after-tax money for liquidity to keep your overall tax rate lower in retirement. It's a really important, it's kind of your most sacred money. But in your case, it's under this third ratio. And I know that you could argue either way, but as far as I'm concerned, if I'm the tiebreaker on this one, I would vote to pay it off. Robin Flowery Branch, thanks for your call, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Have a great rest of your Sunday.
It.
The number here in the studio, give us a call, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750. Leona in Marietta joins us on the show. Leona, what's going on? How can we help?
Well, I do currently own Coca-Cola stock. It is specifically designated upon my death to go to my grandchildren. There are six of them. I'm 76 years old. My grandchildren range from 9 to 19. My question is, I currently enjoy the Coca-Cola dividends. My question is, should I designate those dividends to be reinvested into the Coca-Cola stock for them?
So this is really money that you are not using at all. This is very much designated for the grandkids between ages of 9 and 19.
Correct.
I would say that, and I think that this brings up a larger question about do you dividend reinvest or not? So I think that anybody listening has probably thought about this question, or I don't know, maybe not. But I think it's important to think about because there's two, it's a very important mechanism to choose. If you buy a stock, you can have it in the world that we live in today. It used to be that you almost had to do this through computer share because it would cost money to buy new shares every time. But in the world we live in today, dividend reinvest is it's free in most places, meaning that you get a dividend of $280. That $280 can either go as cash to your account or you can use the $280 to buy another share or two or a fraction of a share. That's the difference between the two. If you don't do dividend reinvest, it's going to come to you as cash. If you do dividend reinvest, the share count that you own for a particular company just keeps going up and up and up. In your case, and I think there's two answers for two different situations. In Leona, in your case, because this is not money that you're using and you're not using it for income, then you want to maximize the rate of return for Coca-Cola. So the answer is yes. I think you should do dividend reinvest for this company because the money's going towards your kids. That Coca-Cola pays $1.60 per share at $54. That's about a 3% dividend yield. Moving forward, that's pretty significant. So you buy 3% more shares every single year. For those that are getting close to retirement or in retirement, I'm a big believer to not do dividend reinvest. That way you can choose where the money goes, either to other investments so it helps you rebalance, or B, you spend that money. It's part of your income. So the answer is for you, Leo, and I do dividend reinvest. For a lot of other investors close to retirement, cash dividends make so much sense. We've got to run to a quick news weather. Then we'll come back and answer more of your questions right here on Money Matters. Welcome back to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. We're answering your calls and questions today here on the show, 404-872-0750. If you don't get through today, you can always email us a question, or if you don't have time today, go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com, and there's a contact button in the upper right-hand corner, and you can email me and the Money Matters team right here in Atlanta. We're actually in Sandy Springs and happy to talk with you throughout the week. Let's go to the phones, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750, or 1-800-WSB-TALK. That's 1-800-972-8255. TJ in Lawrenceville. TJ, what's going on, man? How can we help?
Hey, how are you doing? Hey, so I got a more of a macro question. I didn't hear. So my question is, it's kind of a twofold, and I'm not sure there's a correlation between the two. Is one, the elephant in the room in our economy is the $20 trillion debt, $20 trillion plus. And the eventual and the length of this bull market, which eventually is going to end. So what is your recommendation or what is your concerns about maybe the former and recommendations for preparing for the latter?
Well, I think it's so again, trees don't grow forever. And we have a market that's expanded for a decade, right? The bull market's 10 years old. We have almost the longest economic expansion of all time. So you're right. At some point, we got to put the brakes on and go into a correction. But remember, we've had some corrections. We had a 20% correction, technically a bear market, at the end of last year. So I think this is a good question. So hang on the line here, TJ. We'll come back to you after we come back from break and talk, I think, about a really important question. Does the debt end this whole thing? And how do you prepare for that here on Money Matters? Stay tuned. Right here, 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's news and talk.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss, certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
If you're new to Money Matters, I'm your host, Wes Moss. On the show, we talk about what's happening in the economy, how that impacts you as an investor. And then we love to go answer your calls and questions via you calling in. We're a live show, so 404-872-0750. We'll answer your current questions. If you can't get to us on a Sunday, you can always email us throughout the week. Go to wesmoss.com, contact button upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. And if you miss a show or would like to go back and listen to some of the interviews we've done or past episodes of Money Matters, you can find the podcast, Wes Moss Money Matters, anywhere you find a podcast, whether it be Spotify or iTunes or pretty much any place you find podcasts. If you look for Wes Moss Money Matters, you can tune in to previous episodes of the show. We're going back to TJ, who joins us from Laurentian. TJ, I think you were just saying, hey, man, what happens? We've got all this debt in the country and we've had this long bull market. When does the music stop? I think, is that kind of your question?
Yeah, it's kind of, that's part of it. It's kind of a twofold question is, is $20 trillion plus debt, what impact does that have on the bull market? And second of all, what does a retiree, how's a retiree plan for the end of this bull market, right? You know, how would you reallocate your assets?
A couple of thoughts. Yes. And I think part of it, TJ, has to do with, you know, what stage of investing you're in. Right now, you are tell me how old you are.
I'm 68. I'm retired.
Yeah. So I think my
from a portfolio.
Yeah. I think my answer to you is going to be different than if you were 40 and you said, hey, Wes, the music's going to stop. What do I do? And I want to. So I'll give you kind of two answers depending on what age you are. And specifically because you're 68, you're clearly in retirement age. And you've got a little bit less of a horizon, right? And probably a little less tolerance to see your assets go down in value. And I think, and obviously that plays into all of this significantly. So first of all, yes, we've got a ton of debt. The debt is at some point is an issue. And you've heard this probably many, many times. We are in a very unique scenario in the United States because we print our own money. We literally just create our own currency here in the United States. And because we're the reserve currency on the globe, we can, to some extent, continue to do that. And that's why there's not this worry of defaulting on our debt. Now, does that create a moral hazard? Does it teach our children that you can just pull money out of thin air? Yes, it does, right? So that's that. If you're going to get mad about something about the system, let's get mad at that. But I don't like that if our children really understood how this worked, it's a disgusting thing to teach children about money. It doesn't just grow on trees. Unless you're the U.S. government, you can effectively create money at any point. However, if we're going to be practical about this, we're not going to default on the debt. And that's not in the cards in any time, even remotely in the future. So we have to, and Warren Buffett even wrote about this in his annual letter for 2019 for last year, that look, he originally was a skeptic of the U.S. debt, and doesn't this mean we're going to default? Doesn't this mean it's going to slow us down? And here he is 70 years later of investing, and during that period of time, our debt has grown 400-fold or a 40,000% increase. And during that period of time, we've created a massively strong, productive economy and stock market. So if we looked at the debt as it's this is the true black eye of the economy, and we're scared of that and we don't invest, then we completely miss out on U.S. economic expansion. So I think we actually have to keep that in context. But for you, a couple of thoughts. One, we did have a correction last year. So we were more than a correction. We technically hit bear market territory. I want to say it was the day before Christmas. We were down 20%. for the S&P 500 from peak to trough. That's not just a correction. That's a bear market. So we've had some real volatility. So and last year was a negative year. Two, this economic expansion is borderline the strongest the longest we have seen. The big difference between this expansion and past is that when we come out of recession in the United States, historically, we've had very, very strong growth, 4%, 5%, 6% coming out of a recession. What has happened since the great financial crisis is it's been a very shallow recovery, meaning it's just been slow. So instead of growing at 4 or 5%, the recovery has been more like 2%. Now, we're just starting to see that tick higher, TJ. We just saw 3.2% for the first quarter. But remember, the expansion here has been slower, which can point towards a longer expansion by nature. So I think those are all important kind of larger issues. And as you said, kind of macro issues, right? There's a big picture. For somebody like you, and we'll get to this in a second, if you were 40, I would tell you, look, yes, we're going to go through some sort of economic downpoint sooner than later. Let's call it in the next year or two or three or maybe four. We don't know exactly when because we know it's not going to happen in the next 6 months. The economy is too strong for that. Unless there's some exogenous shock, which we can't predict at any point. But if you were young, I'd say, look, you've got to be prepared the next time this happens. Bad economy, bad stock market. You've got to be prepared to double down. And double down, meaning in try to increase what you're investing during those economic periods of recession and stock market pullbacks. And ride through and stay the course during those tougher periods of time. Because for somebody who's 30 or 40 or even early 50s, volatility is your friend because you're still accumulating, right? If you've got but if you're 68 where you are, TJ, and you're already in retirement, then you've got to have a ballast. You have got to have some sort of balance or ballast, whether that is in bonds, it's probably my first line of defense or your first line of defense. And the second line of defense is to make sure that everything pays you something. So I think a steady income stream in itself is defensive. A steady income stream that pays you 3 or 4% every single year, no matter what, I think that's really defensive because if you're in retirement and you've got a balanced portfolio and the stock market goes down 25%, that means that you should maybe go down 10, 11, 12, which you should be able to live through without losing too much sleep. Otherwise, it's hard to be an investor if you don't know or expect that you're going to have some downside volatility. But during that period of time, if your bonds are or if your fixed income or your bonds are the safe piece of the equation is paying you 2.5% to 4.5%, and the stocks that you own are paying you 2% to 4% in dividends, then you've got a pretty steady and material stream of money coming into you without worrying about buying or selling anything. And that's, I think, the power of being an income investor, number one, and being a balanced income investor, number two. So if you think of it, having a whole mix of bonds and closed-end funds, which are bond-oriented as well, or can be, and they pay out distributions, and then REITs, real estate investment trusts, and then income commodities, which I think of as the pipeline companies, and then dividend paying stocks, and then preferred stocks. Those are six areas, TJ, that if you put them all together, you're going to have income. And if you do it right, you're going to have enough income to live off of and not worry that your 401k account or your IRA or your taxable investment accounts may be down 10 or 15% at any given time. Because you have the income from those same investments to ride you through the next time we get another expansion. Because even though a decline or correction or a bear market or recession always follows an expansion, it always follows an expansion. That's the bad news. The good news is an expansion in a better market always follows a correction or a recession, at least it has historically. And when things get bad, which they will again, it's going to be a period of time that's uncomfortable. And maybe it's 6 months, maybe it's a year, maybe it's 2 years. But then we grow out of that. And that expansion then is again your friend.
But for somebody who's already in their 60s, closer to 70, I think you just have to make sure you have this balance. And the balance is your friend, and the income is a way to keep steady and know that you can ride through these storms at any time. TJ in Lawrenceville, thank you for your call. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750 is the number here in the studio. Again, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK, which is 800-972-8255. Where are we going, Ryan? We're going to two. We're going to Clyde in Jefferson. Clyde, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can I help?
Oh, yes, Wes. I've been meaning to call you for a while about this one. I appreciate what you do. I'm a 59 and a half, thinking about maybe a slightly early retirement. I've got about 10% of my portfolio in balanced funds, the majority in Wellington. As I'm looking forward, though, you know, with a balanced fund like that, you can't sell the stocks when they're high and you can't sell the bonds when they're high. I was thinking of splitting it up. What do you think about selling that and going into independent bond and independent stock funds?
So, Clyde, let me get a little more clarity here. So 10% in balanced funds, or you have every 90% in balanced funds?
No, 10% in balanced funds.
What's the rest of it in?
About a 70-30 split, the various things. I'm a student of you and you know, the American Association of Independent Investors. So I'm pretty well diversified, but fairly aggressive.
So if you think about Wellington right now, Wellington is one of the it's been a wonderful fund, by the way. And what Clyde's talking about, Vanguard Wellington, which is one of their actively managed funds. It's not an index strategy like a lot of their funds. But it's an active strategy, and it has about 65% exposure to stocks. The other 35% is bonds. The answer here is that I'm still okay with using these balanced funds, but your question about do you diversify out and do the bonds separate than the stocks, I think the answer is maybe, but we've got to run to a quick break. So, Clyde, hang on one second here. I'm going to answer your call when we run to a quick news weather. And we'll be back with Money Matters and an answer for Clyde and his balance funds when Money Matters returns. And we're back live. Welcome back to Money Matters. So we're going to have George Strait playing for the rest of the day. As we go back to Clyde in Jefferson, Clyde had asked about taking his balanced mutual funds, which are at Vanguard, Wellington, and breaking out the stock portion versus the bond portion. So, Clyde, I would tell you that, first of all, Wellington it's always been one of the funds that I've always liked. Actively managed fund at Vanguard, still pretty low cost, actually really low cost, and it's done a good job. However, when you're in retirement, though, when you are in retirement, I think it does make sense to have individual companies so that you know exactly what income you're getting. Number one, number two, so that you can rebalance those companies at any given time. At times you're taking profits or if you're being able to control your tax situation. I also think individual bonds can be good too. They're trickier and you've got to be really, really careful with that. But individual bonds can play a role too. The reason I would say yes, break the two out. So Clyde's question is, hey, I've got bonds here and stocks all in one fund. Should I take them out and separately have them? And my answer, Clyde, is yes, I think that's fine to do. I like you to have better control of your income. However, you also have to recognize that where you are today with Wellington, it's also a pretty good way to do it too. So I think you almost would be fine either way. I just have a preference towards being able to control the income a little bit better. Does that make sense? And is that fund, by the way, is it in an IRA or a regular after-tax account, Clyde?
It's actually in two. It's been an old friend. I got into it when I was 30 and I've kept it around because, you know, I didn't understand bonds very well at the time. It's in my 401k and it is also in an after-tax, just a brokerage account.
Right. And I think where you get more, you almost get more advantage to do it and break them out separately would be in your after-tax money, Remember, in an IRA, things are a little bit easier. 401k IRA, you don't have to worry as much about buying or selling or what the income looks like because it's real simple. Everything you take out of the IRA gets just taxed at ordinary income. On the non-IRA side, though, so if you think about where Wellington is for you outside of an IRA, I would say that's where you'd want to take a look at breaking the two out. So I'm a believer in individual stock, so I know the dividend I'm getting at any given quarter. Individual bonds or even your own bond ETFs that kind of have target maturity, so you know exactly when, what those durations look like. You don't want a bunch of long-term bonds right now with rates this low as interest rates rise over, call it, the next 5 to 10 years, and take control of your income. And then in the IRA or 401k, maybe leave that piece of the equation still with Wellington. Clyde, enjoy the rest of this wonderful day. Thanks for the call. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, easy to do so. Just visit WesMoss.com. That's WesMoss.com. There's a contact button in the upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. If you'd like to talk throughout the week and don't have time here on this Sunday, we're happy to do that as well. Again, the website's just WesMoss, WesMoss.com. Have a wonderful rest of your Sunday.